This podcast is brought to you by IFR Refresher, the monthly journal for instrument proficiency and currency.
Welcome to IFR Refresher's audio series. This month, we're speaking with Dr. Michael Green, who's an aviation medical examiner based in Maryland, and he's also a pilot. Dr. Green, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
Thanks for joining us. So the topic for today's podcast is to talk about some of the issues that pilots face when confronting a medical problem or getting their aviation medical exam. Okay. So the first thing that we wanted to know was, what are the two or three most common questions that pilots tend to have about the medical certification process itself?
Well, I wish pilots had more questions. Generally, they come to the exam either because they had it before and they think this is going to be the same, which it usually is, or else they just forget about the fact that there may be an issue that comes up. If they had more questions early, they could either call or they could go to the AOPA website or another place and get information, but most of them come in not knowing what to expect and with no questions.
So it would be more helpful to you if people came in more prepared.
Absolutely. One of the issues is people will go online and fill out either the FAA or the AOPA Turbo Medical, and in their slippers in their bedroom, they'll give a lot more information than they probably should be giving. For example, someone who went to the doctor for chest pain, but the reason was he fell off his bike and hit the side of his, the handlebars.
Right.
But he puts down chest pain and leaves this open question that has to be then closed.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in a lot of ways, you're stuck in the same position as a flight examiner who's taking someone for a check ride. They basically have an hour with this person to evaluate if they're fit to be pilot in command, and with you not knowing this person, you can only evaluate them based on the brief time you have with them and the information they put on the form.
Correct. And if they use the FAA form and submit it, there's no way to undo it. Then I have
right.
to do a whole lot of writing to explain what they put down, that the chest pain is not a significant chest pain, and it's
mm-hmm.
resolved and so on.
Right. So do your homework, folks, and get some help and think about what you're going to, what to expect on your exam before you go. Dr. Green, what disqualifying medical conditions do you most frequently encounter in pilots, and are any of these pilots ever able to fly again after they realize that they have this problem?
A large number of medical conditions like heart-related problems and, say, colitis or a gastrointestinal stomach problem, once it's resolved and a period of time has gone by, they can apply for their medical and usually will get it. Issues like depression and anxiety, they're not allowed to fly with when it's active, but once it's treated and they're off medicines and 3 months have gone by, they will usually get recertified.
Mm-hmm. Tying into one of the articles that was in the December issue of IFR Refresher that this podcast is tied to was a pilot who may have encountered trouble and had an accident because he was taking an antidepressant that was on the, quote, list of disqualifying medications. Are there any medications that people can take for anxiety or depression and still allow them to fly, or is that pretty much a blanket no-go?
There are really none. The anxiety medicines are all sedating, and the issue with anxiety and depression is there's a continuum from a little anxious to having panic attacks and being non-functional. And likewise, depression can go from a little sad to suicidal non-functioning. And the FAA has not been able to draw a line. So if someone says depression, they don't know where in that continuum anybody might be. So to the present time, they have said if you have these problems, you are disqualified until they're over or resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, any of the medicines that are used to treat them are disqualified.
Gotcha. Along those lines, what would you recommend a pilot do if he or she has a valid medical certificate but develops a problem that they suspect might be disqualifying? What's the best way for a pilot to determine whether or not they should continue flying?
Well, the FAA makes it very clear, and they send this number out, all 6154, the paragraph that says, if you have a condition you think is disqualifying, then you're disqualified, regardless of whether it's in the manual and whether it's in Part 67 or not. So you're supposed to disqualify yourself if you have doubts. Now, sometimes something may come up that you're really not sure whether it would be considered disqualifying. And there are a number of online help sites like the AOPA, which is excellent. Their medical section is very good and easy to use. Next step would be to call your AME, and if it's a complicated problem, you might charge it for the consult, but he'll answer your questions. Or you could try an anonymous call to your region, in our case, Eastern Region, FAA, and pose the question and see what they say.
They're amenable to taking such random calls from pilots?
They are.
Huh. All right, that's good to know. What are some of the common misconceptions that pilots have about what will occur during an FAA medical exam, either a first, second, or a third class medical?
Interesting. Most of them figure there's going to be a blood test, which there is not, or a drug screen, which there is not, unless there is a suspicion. And then the AME could order whatever he feels is necessary.
And that would be determined by the AME at the time?
That's right.
And how would under what circumstances might that occur? I mean, if someone comes in and they're a little tired and their eyes look glassy, is the AME going to suspect that they're on drugs? Or how does the AME determine those things?
I've had people come in with clear alcohol on their breath. And they say, oh, I had a party last night, you know, and when was the party over? And it was more than 8 hours, and you're still smelling of alcohol, you know. I'm probably going to recommend an alcohol screen or just qualify them right then and there.
And the person may or may not have an alcohol problem, but clearly coming hungover to a medical exam is not good decision making.
You would be surprised how often I've seen that.
Ay, ay, ay. All right.
The other point I was going to make is that a lot of times pilots will come in for their medical, and while they're at the doctor's, they'll try to get a medical problem solved. I've been having this abdominal pain, and what do you think of it? So now you've got a situation where the AME wants to give you your certificate, but you've got an undiagnosed medical problem. Even if it turns out to be minor, he can't give the certificate until he's worked through the problem. So it's not a good idea to combine your flight physical with a medical visit.
Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like that, if you suspect that there's anything wrong with you, maybe a good idea to go to your general practitioner, family physician, first for a checkup before you go approach an FAA medical examiner and find out where you stand first before opening up a can of worms unnecessarily.
Very good advice. Another point is to remember that the FAA requires on question 19 on the form, we use the form a lot so we know the numbers, a list of all the doctors you've seen in the prior 3 years and the reasons. Now, routine dental and routine eye exams are not included, and routine FAA exams are not included, but every other doctor visit should be tabulated. It's a good idea to keep a file at home, and every time you see a doctor, toss a piece of paper in the file, and then when you're due for your medical exam, look through the file and see what's there. And even type it out and bring it in. That would be very useful.
Good.
And don't forget your glasses. A lot of people wear glasses, and amazingly, they come to their physicals and, I left my glasses at home. I don't usually use them except when I'm flying.
Oh, good point. Good point. Dr. Green, one last thing. Can you think of any medical condition that, if experienced by a pilot, should disqualify them for flying IFR but might not necessarily prevent them from flying VFR?
That's a good question. Of course, the rules are the same for VFR and IFR. The FAA does not distinguish. But of course, IFR is a lot more demanding, especially if you get into a crunch situation, so your health is more critical. An issue that comes up all the time as pilots get into their 40s is their near vision begins to decrease, and they may be able to fake it or get by not looking at a chart or straining to see a chart in VFR, but in IFR, they're constantly referring to charts and having to be accurate with frequencies, et cetera, radials. It's important to have good vision.
Mm-hmm. And especially now that we're having, a lot of our readers are flying aircraft with glass cockpits and electronic charts. I know I've personally noticed that sometimes the font, the typeface on some of those electronic charts, unless you zoom it in, can be rather small. So you could see how someone with so-so vision might have a hard time seeing some of those things.
Exactly. And another issue is the distance from your eye to the different parts of the panel you can't control. Maybe you'll lean forward, but a chart you can hold in front of you and square it off, but the panel is kind of diagonal. And if you're wearing bifocals or trifocals, you do a lot of playing around, and it's really good to practice that on the ground and get comfortable, make sure your glasses are right, rather than trying to do it in the air.
Good. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time. And folks, Dr. Green had mentioned a few websites where pilots can go for more information. We're going to include those links on the page where you found the link to this podcast. So do your homework and good luck on your next medical. Dr. Green, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by IFR Refresher. For more on IFR Refresher, log on to www.belvoir.com.